Blog Talk Radio.
There will be days that just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout, your hands up in the air, wondering what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down in time. Road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Stand in your way.
They're always saying,
always saying what you cannot do. Mm-hmm. Don't stop chasing your dreams and working hard to make them come true. Oh. And if it ever gets too tough, just remember. Don't kill you, makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't alone. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll give you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside.
Keep on.
gentlemen, welcome to Continue for Truth Radio. I am so sorry. I just gave that whole monologue with my phone on mute. So that is why you had dead air. I apologize for that, folks. I'm having some stuff going on in the background. I'm waiting for Michael and for Jennifer and Dan to show up. Jennifer's running a little bit late, and we can't get a hold of Dan, so I put the phone on mute. So we apologize for that. So we'll start over again. We want to welcome you to Continue for Truth Radio. This is our Parental Sovereignty Radio Show, where each week we talk about conservative issues, the current events of the day, as well as many other things, but mainly surrounding what's going on in our public schools. Folks, you know, I'm a firm believer. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican because one of the reasons why I am is I believe in sovereignty. I believe in my individual sovereignty. I believe in the sovereignty of a mom and a dad to raise their family the way they want to raise. I believe in parental sovereignty. I believe in local sovereignty. I believe in state sovereignty. And I believe in the sovereignty of the United States of America. And we're right now, we're fighting for our parental sovereignty. We're watching things like Common Core and some other things that are out there that are starting to try and invade and come into our home and decide to tell us how we need to raise our children. And so this is Parental Sovereignty Radio, and we're going to have a great guest. I'm looking forward to this. Michael, and I should have made sure I got your name right, Michael, before while we were in the green rooms. I'm going to make sure I'm pronouncing it right. Michael Dreikorn, running for Congress down in Florida. And let me tell you, folks, he's fighting for parental sovereignty. And he wants to go to Congress and fight for parental sovereignty. He wants to eliminate Common Core. He wants to make sure, folks, that we've got the right as parents to raise children as they need to be raised in the family. Like I said, we've got Jennifer and Dan are a little bit late this evening, so we're not going to go through our roundabout comments before they get started. When they get here, we'll just bring them into the conversation. So, Michael, I want to welcome you. I want to thank you for coming on. We're looking forward to talking about you and your history a little bit and the things that you believe and having our roundtable discussion as we do each week here on Contending for Truth Radio. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, Scott, I'm doing great things, and it's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Good deal. You know, Michael, you and I have both got something in common. We were raised in California, and we left. I was born and raised in California. I left as a young adult and went back to Indiana for a while and spent some time down there in Florida where you're at. But I went back like a crazy man, and we finally got back out of there. But you were raised in California. You remember the years that flourished in California. California, after Ronald Reagan was the governor of that great state, some great things went on. I'll tell you, folks, if you want to hear anything bad about Ronald Reagan when he was governor of California, you just tell everybody to be quiet, because he turned around and he gave the taxpayers back money. He balanced the economy so well, and it was great times. So I want to hand it to you and let you give us a little bit about your background, and then we'll just take it from there.
Sure. Thanks, Scott. Well, you know, I don't know that we left. I think we escaped California.
That's right.
Because, you know, I grew up in the times when Governor Reagan was there, and I went through his school system. And I got to tell you, man, you know, going through the school systems in the mid-60s and throughout the 70s, we really had our stuff together back then. We knew what to teach in the classrooms, because it was designed at the local level, and you know, we had accountability. You know, I made a couple trips to the principal's office myself, you know, but we lose that ability to instill discipline in our educational system as we become more and more liberal. Now, I left California in 1980 when I joined the Army, and thank goodness Governor Reagan escaped California at the same time thereabouts and became President Reagan. So he was my commander-in-chief for the 7.5 years that I was in the Army. And I got to tell you, again, you know, a much different time than we have today. But I've been in the aerospace and defense industry for about 34 years now. Again, starting my roots off in the Army, but you know, after my military time, coming back to California, and again, you know, it was still an industry in California that was respectable. It doesn't exist anymore because we've had way too much federal intrusion. EPA and OSHA have completely chased all industry out of California. So I'm not a politician. This is my first run for any kind of office. But what I am is I'm one pissed off citizen, and it's time for us to stand up. And as far as running timing goes, we here in South Florida, we had a little bit of a problem with our previous congressman. He liked a little bit of the Coca-Cola up the nose, if you know what we mean. And he resigned in January. Actually, it was December. And our governor said, hey, we're going to have a special election. So this has been an absolute sprint since mid-January. We've been campaigning, and we have a primary coming up this April 22nd.
Well, you know, I'm glad you started there, because I didn't realize that was the circumstances behind this election. And it's going to lead really into something that a thought process that I will carry through this entire show. I do each week. And that's the concept of character. You know, because I'll tell you where I stand, Michael. In fact, Dan and Jennifer and I, all three, came together because of Herman Cain. We helped Herman Cain. And, in fact, a lot of the people that helped Herman Cain had never been active before. I'd never been active. I voted. I was very active with my mouth, telling people why I was conservative. But I'd never been that way before. But after Herman Cain suspended, he said, go local, and we did. And I've supported a good handful of different Congress people running for Congress, for Senate, or smaller races, board of supervisors, different races. We've got Sid Miller here running for our agricultural commissioner, supporting him. And I'll tell you, I'm a conservative. I'm a solid conservative. I've got good conservative beliefs when it comes to sovereignty, when it comes to economics, and when it comes to social issues. I'm a conservative. And I like good conservative candidates. But I'll tell you, that's not enough for me. They've got to be solid in their character, too. And because we've got a lot of people that we've sent to Congress who they're just not solid. We don't know when they get to Congress, when they get to the Senate, they change when they get there. And so, you know, you're replacing somebody who was not solid. And I've been looking at you for the last couple of weeks, and I'm going to tell you from what I find you. Well, let me tell you, you're in good company on this show, because we don't let people on this show unless we all three believe that the candidate is solid in their convictions and solid in their character. And their background is one that they don't want to go play politics. They want to go to make a difference, and they want to work for their constituents. I would say it's the anti-Barbara Boxer, can you please call me senator, because I've earned it attitude. And so I'm going to kind of keep that kind of a concept going as we go through the entire show, because, you know, we end up in this situation a lot, Mike. We really, really, really right now on both sides of the aisle have some people in all of levels of government who've got character issues. They're following the money. They are making decisions just based on blind leadership instead of just doing the right thing. And so with that, I want to take us into our first subject, which is Common Core. You know, this is another issue that it's the reason why we started this show. A year ago, I found out about Common Core through Phyllis Schlafly. And Phyllis Schlafly, she says, we made ERA fall in the 70s, and I believe we're going to make Common Core fall this time as well. And so we started this show as an answer to that. So I want to hand it to you and just let you talk a little bit. Give us your impressions of Common Core, why you believe it's hard to fight it, and what Michael Drakehorn can do when he gets to Congress to help us not just rearrange the deck chairs. Indiana rearranged the deck chairs. In fact, even Texas rearranged the deck chairs a little bit. But pull this sucker out by the roots, spray it with Roundup, and make sure it doesn't come back again.
Absolutely. I had the honor of attending an event last month with Phyllis, and she is a real patriot. You know, she stands up for everything that's right, and you know, with regards to the Constitution and ensuring our liberty. And people, sometimes they confuse the terms freedom and liberty and interchange them. They're not the same. You can be free and still not have any liberty. Liberty is what we have. It's granted through our Constitution and is guaranteed at the state level with our 10th Amendment. And you know, the Constitution's real clear with regards to what powers that we as citizens delegate to the government. It says that, you know, anything that's contemplated in the Constitution with regards to federal powers are essentially the federal powers that we've delegated. Everything else resides with the state. So when we developed this agency called the Department of Education, there was no provision in the Constitution to actually establish that. It was a nice-to-do concept that, you know, that may have started well-intended, but it's grown into this monster. Now, the Common Core itself is not a federal program per se. It's one of these programs that are, you know, it's funded by the Department of Education in some regards. It's got some private funding. It's got a lot of private funding, actually. And you know, the idea there was to create this federal standard with regards to what good looks like with a K-12 system, so that when the kids come out, they can go into college, and you know, there's this cookie cutter output that, you know, can go into the input of the college system. But you know, they've gone a lot further than that, and they've defined not only what the standards are, but the content and the methodology of thinking and prescribing the actual texts. And you know, it gets to the point where, you know, I've got three grandchildren. If my grandchildren ask me to help them with their homework, there's some stuff I just can't do anymore. And I have a doctorate in education, so I would think that I'm schooled enough to be able to do it. But the methodology that's being proposed is really doesn't have any relevancy in the real world application that we live in. So what I'm concerned with is that we get on this train called Common Core that says we want to have a standard output citizen that has all this knowledge. But you know what? God did create us in his image, but we're not all the same. Not everybody's going to be college material when they finish their 12th grade, if they finish their 12th grade. And we need to have alternative methods as far as providing people or kids skills so that they can enter a workforce and provide some sort of value. So, but you know, to say that there is a single solution at the national level is insane. We need to have at the state level to tell us, you know, our state has unique issues, unique needs. Florida, for example, is a very dependent on its agricultural base. It's also very much a service industry base. And in certain sectors of the state, certain areas, we have a high technology, you know, like over where NASA used to be with the Kennedy Space Program. So, you know, those areas need to be able to develop their own kids and define the knowledge requirements for kids. So the further we get away from the local discretion, the less the influence we have to be able to actually meet the needs of the local requirements.
Well, and I couldn't agree with you any more. I'm serious, because I believe that what you just said there is not only the solution to Common Core, but it's a solution to a lot of things. I'm a firm believer in giving the power to the states. In the summer of 1787, and Dan and I are both kind of history buffs, we love history, we got a pretty good group of founding fathers who spent 2 months locked up in a very hot room working very, very hard to write a constitution that gave our federal government some very specific powers. And the purpose of that document, the Constitution of the United States, was to take and give the government their little group of powers and then to reserve the rest of those rights to the states. And it's just common sense when it all comes down to it. We a lot of times like to call it government and our history of our government, but it's flat-out common sense. The reason why I jumped on the Herman Cain bandwagon was because Herman Cain made one phrase, and he caught me, and I worked for him hard ever since that day. He said, the federal government cannot micromanage. And the federal government cannot. And I'll tell you, Michael, I worked for World Book Encyclopedia in the 90s. And we had a common curriculum back in the 90s. I know we did because across the United States because we had a little pamphlet that we handed out to the parents. And it was 12 pages long. There was a page for every grade. And you could open that up and you could tell the parent exactly, no matter what state you were in, what they were going to study in that year. If they were in the fifth grade, they were going to learn about their state. They were going to learn states and capitals. If they were in the eighth grade, they were going to start, most of them, a pre-algebra kind of an idea, some early algebra. They were going to study the Constitution and early American history in the eighth grade. We've had a common curriculum for a long time. I'm also a firm believer that Common Core was not designed to solve the problem that is stated. It's exactly like Obamacare. Obamacare, there's a stated problem. It wasn't designed to actually accomplish that. It was designed to accomplish something else. And the only way we can protect ourselves from federal infringement like that is to give it back to the states. We're not stupid out in our states. We're pretty smart here in Texas. We got a pretty good economy going here. And if California wants to mess up theirs, that's good. Go ahead and do that, but leave us here in Texas alone. I don't want the federal government messing up anything. And there's important parts for the federal government. I'm a firm believer in that, too. But when it all comes down to it, I'm a firm believer in states' rights, and I believe that that's what's going to eventually save this country. Well, we've got both of my co-hosts on. We've got Dan. Dan Wilson, he's down there close to you. He's down there in Newport Richey. So I'm going to pass it to Dan for kind of his opening remarks and let him say a couple of words to you, Michael. And then I'll let Dan pass it to Jennifer and her opening remarks. And then we'll continue our conversation with more. I want everybody to remember this is Contending for Truth Radio. This is our Parental Sovereignty Radio show. And we've got Michael Dreikorn on. Am I saying that right, Michael? Dreikorn?
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, it's
okay,
like
very good. Running for Congress down in Florida. So, Dan, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fine. I'm sorry I'm a little late on logging in today. It was, believe it or not, you know, this old age and the heart disease. I fell asleep sitting up. So, but I'm here. Finally
okay.
Awake. And,
but, you know, Dan, it's kind of interesting because I had been talking with Michael and it set him up for tonight. And then all of a sudden you shot me a message and you said, you know, I'm having this discussion with this guy running for Congress down in Florida and he's great. We need to get him on. And then you gave me the name. And I said, well, we've already got him all set up. So you've had contact with Michael also. And we're excited that we've got you a candidate down there in Florida. I don't want to hog all the good ones. I think I've got all the good ones here in Texas. But
you know,
I think we've got
a family living there in Texas.
Where at,
family
Michael?
In Texas. Yeah, right
where
outside
at?
Dallas and in Galveston and Corpus Christi.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Oh,
it's and you know, it's a beautiful place, and I'm partial to Florida as well, of course. So, Dan, I'll pass it back to you and let you have some conversation with Michael a little bit, and then when you're done, we'll pass it to Jennifer.
So you're down over in the Fort Myers area, or
yeah. So we're District 19, which includes most of Lee County and most of Collier County. And that goes all the way up from Cape Coral over to the Barrier Islands, down through Fort Myers, Naples, Marco Island.
Oh, okay. So Punta Gorda is not in your district?
No, that's just north of us, just barely.
Ah, darn, I would have had another vote for you.
I need everyone I can get. I got to tell you, though, Dan, you know, I'm a grassroots candidate, and so far, and there's three other Republicans in this primary, and collectively in the last 2 months, they've spent well over $3 million, and I've spent maybe $30,000, you know, because I don't have the super PACs. They're splitting around 22% of the vote each, and I'm at 14%. So I think my return on investment way outshines super PACs.
Oh, definitely. You know what? Florida is a funny state, especially the further south you go. the more left they go, it seems. So if I ever can talk you into coming up to the Tampa area, a little further north up in Hudson, come on up. I have a congressman I'm not exactly thrilled with.
Well, you know, the thing about getting too far north, it gets colder up there. You know, we don't have any frost down here where we live.
Oh, my dad lives in Punta Gorda, and he's usually a couple degrees warmer.
Yeah.
We don't get too cold right here.
No.
It's when you get up into Spring Hill North, into Hernando County, that area,
mm-hmm.
that's where it gets cold.
Sure,
and
sure.
Then citrus is even worse.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful area up there. You've got Crystal River that runs up that way, and it's if you're into diving at all, you can dive in the Crystal River, and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, I used to be a diver. My problem is right now I'm suffering from stage 4 heart disease. So.
Ouch.
Yeah, so I'm kind of grounded from my old diving days. And for a while there, I also used to live down in Lauderdale. And before that, I was down over in Key West for a while.
That gets exciting. You know, I got to say, though, you've seen a lot of Florida. So, you know, some of the challenges we have right now are the threat of Common Core. We have Common Core being branded here in Florida under a different name, and it's called the Florida Standards. But the reality is it's Common Core. And
it is.
And the challenge we have is that we don't have representatives in Tallahassee that have the intestinal fortitude to tell the establishment to pack sand. What we have is a lot of yes people up in Tallahassee that are going to, you know, nod affirmatively and go ahead and pass this federally, you know, not developed, but you know, this national common core that is something we don't want. The voters down here don't want it. I have yet to meet anybody down here in our district that wants Common Core.
It's the same here. We're very, very disappointed in our governor. I honestly thought Governor Scott was going to stand up against it, and he just dropped the ball.
Yeah, and, you know, he has. He has. Maybe Texas can send us Abbott over.
No, you can't have it.
Well, I'm telling you.
Well, and you know, it's you really hit the point, Michael, that we come back to this almost every week on the show, and I'll tell you what you just said. Our leaders don't have the intestinal fortitude to pack sand. We need people in leadership at all levels, and we support candidates all the way down to small supervisors races, because we believe some of the times the smaller races are just as important as the big races. But we've got to have candidates that are going to go in and replace some of these guys that don't have the guts to stand up and say no for the people. And, you know,
yep.
Common Core is not a bipartisan issue. The liberals don't like it either. You know, I don't understand why the liberals don't like it when the corporate takes over, and we don't like it when the government takes over, and Common Core is a mix of both. The corporate is taking over, and I'm in a group, 15,000 parents and educators. I'm an admin in this group against Common Core, and it's made up of both sides, heavily on both sides. So I do believe we're gonna pass this. We're gonna get rid of it. I think it's gonna take us a lot of work, but it's gonna take some Michael Dreikorns in Congress to stand up and say no, and say no to the money, say no to the insanity, say no to the establishment, and stand up for the constituents. And with that, Jennifer Montrose, is down there in Alabama, and Alabama's doing some great things to fight Common Core. They've won some battles, and they've lost some battles. In fact, I'm not quite sure. Jennifer will have to tell me this. At one time, I know Jonathan Barbee mentioned that Alabama was writing the book to help other states to know how to fight Common Core. And there's a lot going on down there in Alabama. So I'll pass it to Jennifer Montrose. Jennifer, how are you doing? How is your trip? Are you home from your trip?
Yes, I am. Just spent four lovely days in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, listening to some wonderful rain and wind and just birds and just all the wonderful things of nature. But it was a great time spent with some girlfriends of mine, and I'm glad to be back home, though. I will tell you that I was on the phone earlier tonight with some other patriot friends of mine, and we were talking about how the establishment is so disconnected from just the regular common people. You know, when a candidate gets out and really starts getting personable with a constituent, people don't know what to do with that because they're so used to here's the politician way up here, and then here we are way down here. And, you know, we've got so much happening right now where, Jeb Bush, I really hope that we can get past his, you know, ridiculous idea of wanting to run for president. This is stuff. You know, because we do not need to have an endorsement of raising our kids to become robots. You know, and his support of Common Core is just that to me. You know, we know what we've already done this before. Look at World War II. Look at what happened. You know, we strip people of knowledge. We take away their Second Amendment rights. We take the guns away. And then we start, you know, teaching the children, you know, how to be robots. And we take away their creativity, and then, you know, America's going to be lost somewhere in this wasteland of muck and mire. And, you know, and it's a travesty. I remember those days of Schoolhouse Rock and the kids growing up saying that, you know, they don't have this vision of being on welfare for the rest of their life. It's not about trying to get one up over so that I can just make enough money to keep the check rolling in. What about children that want to grow up and be the fireman or the astronaut or the doctor? What about the children that are really, you know, excited about reading, you know, and learning things? And it seems like that with our current wave of where our education seems to be trying to head, that children are just not inspired like they used to be. You know, we've got one of my dear friends, Stacey Tallbush, who used to be with us on this show, talks about how, you know, even on the playground, the kids are taught that there's no winners or losers. And how does a child, you know, face the challenges of life if they're not given challenges to have to deal with in their younger years, you know, where they have learned the value of hard work? You
know, try telling the mortgage company there's no winners or losers. You're right, Jennifer. It's exactly,
you know,
right.
Yes, I agree. I had a 12-year-old son, and I'm trying to teach him that, you know, he doesn't get an allowance every week. He gets a commission based on what he does around the house. You know, so if you don't do anything, you don't produce anything, you know, if you don't do anything to the garden, if you don't do anything, the seeds you planted will die, you know,
right.
And you'll get weeds. And that's what we're doing to our children now. And I would like to know from you, you know, what are some of the things that you're doing? I know there's been some issues in 19, as we have in other states as well, with our Second Amendment rights being violated. I know there's been a lot going on. I'm just, you know, and that, and also, you know, when you take the guns away and you start asking for people to register, the only people that will have access to those, we take the citizens' right away to bear arms, will be the thugs and the thieves.
You want to hear something crazy? We have an Attorney General, Mr. Holder, who presented to Congress last Friday the concept of having those who have concealed weapons permits wear GPS-enabled ankle bracelets so that the law enforcement agents know always where the guns are. Are you kidding me? What about the bad guys that don't register, right? Those are the ones you have to worry about, not the honest Joes. You know, back in 2004, when it was actually 6 months after I moved to Florida, I had the benefit of experiencing my first hurricane. And it was called Hurricane Charlie. It went right over my house. And actually, the house I had bought was destroyed. So I came back to ruins. We had these people that weren't from the island. Some people refer to them as looters. And they were trying to rip off everything in the driveways. You know, people were putting what they had out of their homes out on the street or on the driveway to kind of preserve things. But we had people driving by that didn't belong here. Our neighbors, you know, we took care of that because our sheriff's department was pretty much, you know, devastated too. And we had people from the other side of the state coming over to help us during the day. But, you know, we live out in the country. So in order to protect ourselves, we got the biggest guns we had, and we walked around and made sure everybody saw us. If we didn't have the Second Amendment on our side, there's no way we could have done that. We would have been at the mercy of the hooligans. You know, and I'll never allow that to happen on my watch. So in Florida, we just had, unfortunately, a bill presented that was been killed. And it's a Second Amendment preservation right. Essentially, it was to make it illegal for any state employee that would, you know, specifically talk about law enforcement to enforce a federal rule that violated the Second Amendment. So let's assume that somebody from the executive branch decided they're going to write something with their pen and their cell phone, and it didn't need to follow the Second Amendment or go through Congress. Well, that law wouldn't have been legal in Florida if it violated our Second Amendment. But unfortunately, our people in Tallahassee, again, didn't have the intestinal fortitude to grab that sucker and pass it. They let it die. We need people, and really when we talk about sovereignty, we need people at the state level, you know, underscore that, at the state level, that will stand and fight for the powers that we've given them at the state level and defend the 10th Amendment.
Yeah, I agree with you totally. You know, another issue that's been really heavily on the table is the immigration issue. You know, I really think that, you know, Mexico has tougher restrictions on immigration than we do. If we were to, you know, do our part to adhere to our laws that we already have on the books, you know. So what is your take on the immigration reform?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great question. There's another website called Numbers USA. They rate candidates with regards to their ability to look at the immigration issue from both a legal and illegal perspective, and do the right thing. And they reserve about 1% of their ratings for people that they refer to as true reformers. And they gave me that rating based on my positions on immigration. We have an American culture that's out of control. It's in a death spiral right now. We have, up until 1965, we had about 250,000 legal immigrants a year. That was a sustainable number that allowed, you know, for us to indoctrinate immigrants into the American way of life and making sure that those immigrants shared our core values. We tested them. You know, we made sure they knew the Constitution. We made sure that they weren't bringing a disease with them. Right now, our policies let in excess of over 1 million legal immigrants a year, on top of the 11 to 30 million illegals we have. Our population in this country is about 347 million. So about 10% of our population is illegal. We no longer have the ability to indoctrinate those that are coming to our country, you know, that are not born here. We can't make them Americans anymore. they're converting us to something no longer American. We have to change that. We have to change it now. We need to secure our borders now, and we need to make sure that we're taking immigration reform and doing the right thing. Now, that includes the migrant worker thing. You know, there is a business argument to have migrant workers, but dang it, we need to have that controlled, and we need to make sure we know where these people are, so when we no longer need them, it's time to go home.
I can agree with you much more. I tell you, I come from California, where we depend on the migrant workers. But you know what? You make a point that a lot of people don't make, and that's the overwhelmed system that we've got right now, not enabling us to bring these people in and make them Americans. And you know, I learned something. We were talking, you know, Michael, before we started the show about Grenada and Trinidad. When I lived down in Florida, I worked in Grenada and Trinidad, and I loved it. I got to go down there. A lot of people go down there, and they see the resort, and they see the tourist things. I got to go down there and live and eat with the people and work with the people. And I'll tell you, my heart was broken because there were people down there that wanted to legally go through the challenge of immigrating to America. In fact, I had about 15 women lined up, wanted to immigrate that way by marrying me. And they wanted to move here so badly, and they wanted to come and participate. They wanted to be Americans, especially in Grenada. They love us from what Ronald Reagan went down there and kicked Fidel Castro out of Grenada. They call us the saviors. And I heard over and over and over again, but we keep being told that we can't because the people of south of your border, they're jumping ahead of us in line. And, you know, folks, when it all comes down to it, if you went to Disneyland and you wanted to stand in line for 2 hours to ride a ride, and then all of a sudden a bunch of people jumped over the gate, jumped over the fence, and ran in front of you, Disney'd kick them out of the park. And that's our problem. You know, this country was founded on immigrants. We were all immigrants at one point, but legal immigrants and coming through. And we've just – I think you're right, Michael. I think we've got a mess.
My father immigrated. My father came in 1957. He came over from Europe, but he came in the front door, you know, and he had to go through all the hoops and hurdles to do it the right way. But so many other people, you know, that don't respect our laws, they come in that back door, and now there's this demand for amnesty. That's the last thing we should do, is reward people who break our laws. That's the last thing we should do. And by the way, if we do that, we're going to have anywhere between 11 and 30 million new liberals. We shouldn't go there.
Exactly. It'll absolutely wipe us out. I want to cover one more little thing that you covered, and then we'll just keep going around Robin Hood's barn as we do each week. You know, you mentioned your grandchildren. And this is why I fight, and I know Jennifer, she fights. She's got a son, and she fights for his future. I've got my three nieces that are my life. Anybody that knows me knows that there's not two sentences that don't go by when I talk about my three beautiful nieces. And I'm homeschooling the oldest and the youngest, and I've been homeschooling the youngest since she was 3 years old. And I want to tell you something. She was reading by the time she was four. And I'll tell you, when we start talking about Common Core and shoving a lot of things into the schools and changing this system and changing that system, I taught her how to read before her fourth birthday using a dry erase marker and the front of the refrigerator, a few flashcards, and a Sesame Street senior alphabet video. And she's sitting at just barely 5 years old now, and she's working on second grade curriculum. And I'm going to tell you, folks, I didn't need Common Core to accomplish that task. And I don't say that because I'm some magician. I just did what came natural. She learns. And, you know, Common Core, they're throwing every dime they can in to fix the problem. That's been our attitude in our schools since we were all kids, throw more money at it. It's not about throwing money at it. It's about throwing time. And our public schools right now, they are kind of in a mess. We've got 17% of the illiterate in this country who went through public school. Well, boy, I want to know how a child goes through over 60,000 hours of public school and can't come out and read something that I did with a black dry erase marker and the front of a refrigerator. And so with that, you know, I want to move on to a little bit different issues here. I want to go back kind of where you were heading a while ago, Michael, and that's our state's power. You know, because when it all comes down to it, when the federal government gets too far out of control, the only power that really the people have, unless we all just go marching up to Washington, D.C., and just in mass, 300 million people saying enough is enough, is through our state governments. It's through our law enforcement, especially our sheriffs, our state representatives, and giving the states power. So I want you to expound on some of that a little bit more. Sovereignty at the state level. How does a congressman go to Washington, D.C.? What are some of the things that our congressmen, our senators can do when they get to Washington, D.C. to help back up the states? Because I think we've got a lot of, on both sides of the aisle, this is not a partisan issue by a long shot, but we've got a lot of people on both sides of the aisle in Washington, D.C., who have the attitude of Barbara Boxer, that they are the servants, they are not the servants of the people, but they're there to tell the people what to do. Dan and I do parentals, we do a Saturday symposium on Saturdays, and we always start out with Red Skelton telling the Pledge of Allegiance. And he says,
isn't that awesome?
It's right, exactly.
That is just magnificent.
He says, from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people. So how do we change? How do we go to Washington, D.C. and get that mentality back of, I'm here to serve you. I'm here to serve my constituents. I'm not up here to play on K Street and play the game of politician and be important and follow the money.
Well, I think you have a good role model there in Texas, and that's Ted Cruz. You know, if we look back at some of the people that we look up to in government, you know, they have one thing in common. They're charismatic. And, you know, Ted Cruz is early in his career, but I think he's got a lot of potential with regards to being a good influencer, a good communicator. You know, and Ronald Reagan, what is he known for? The great communicator. When you looked at him, you know, he wasn't a big muscular. I mean, he was when he was younger. He was a buff guy. But, you know, when he was an older man when he ran for president. But he still commanded respect by his actions and by his utilization of his language. We need people that can lead by example and have the kids look up and say, hey, that man, he's a smart man. You know, I want to be like him. When was the last time that you heard a kid referred to a politician as a positive role model? You know, we have all these things. We have congressmen getting caught in affairs, doing cocaine, selling guns to terrorists. I mean, all kinds of stupid stuff. We need, and you touched on it earlier, Scott, it's about character. So if the man or the woman has character, and they have the ability to stand on their toes and not get kicked back on their heels every time that somebody gets in their face, and has the ability to dish it back just as quick as they get it. That's the kind of leadership we need in Washington, and that's the kind of leadership we need at the state level. But, you know, there's a shelf life on those that represent us because it takes a lot of work. And, by the way, you know, there's a lot of influence out there that eventually, you know, you just get worn down. That's why we have to have term limits, too. I've signed a pledge for term limits. I'm going to co-sponsor a bill that limits the terms for congressmen to 3 and senators to 2. Send them home and let somebody else who's a citizen with skin in the game represent. That way we have real by-the-people representation. We don't have that anymore. We have special interest representation. And I'm not going to say all special interest is bad because, you know, we've got special interest that represents veterans. We have special interest that represents older folks. You know, but, you know, when we have political action committees and we have special interest that represents industries, carpenters, you know, dentists. I mean, those are all noble special interests. But where that special interest term gets negative is when they start buying the influence, when they start lobbying on behalf of exclusively that special interest at the expense of the people.
And when you start buying elections, all the money that's in this election right now, that down here in District 19, with the exception of one gentleman who's very, very wealthy and self-funding himself, but the other two are essentially, they've had their money through PACs, political action committees. So all the advertising, all the messaging being sent out is by third parties that are not even in our state. It's obscene. Americans, especially American voters, need to get educated on the political system and understand that the Constitution gave the rights to the people, and the people delegated powers to the government. The government has zero rights. They have no rights. So if we give them powers, we can take them away.
Amen. Amen 100%. And I'll tell you, I'll say this, and then I'm going to pass it back down to Dan. You know, I made a promise a year and a half ago to a man named Larry Nichols. I don't know if you recognize that name or not, but he was responsible for the Clinton Chronicles. And he was a campaign manager for a lady that ran, Dr. Agana, ran for, I believe, the Senate. She didn't win her primary. A friend of his said, I want you to take a look at Dr. Agana, and I would like for you to be her campaign manager. He hadn't been in politics for a while. And he went to Dr. Agana, and he gave her these words. He says, I'll tell you what, I will be your campaign manager if you'll make me one promise. He says, when you get to Washington, D.C., you make sure that you hire your staff. He said, the first thing they're going to do, Dr. Agana, is you're going to get to Washington, D.C., and they're going to say, okay, we've got a staff for you. You've got this person, this person, this person, this person, and this person. Because the first thing they want to do is take control over you. And I promised Larry Nichols, every candidate that I ever spoke to, that I would continue to pass on that word of advice, because that's the attitude that we end up, that's how we end up in bad characters, things like that. Washington, D.C., you end up in the mess. But I believe, and Michael, I'm a pretty good judge of character. Like I said earlier, we only have good candidates on this show. If I look at a candidate, it's going to be a candidate that I kind of feel is going to get to Washington, D.C. and kind of waffle on us. I don't even bother. But when it's a good candidate that I feel's got good, strong character, when they're going to be the same person when they come out as they are when they went in, we give them 100% support. We'll be talking about your name. Every show we'll be discussing your name. We talk about Sid Miller running for agricultural commissioner. We've got Dave Souza running for the supervisor's race in El Dorado County, above Sacramento. Small race, but an incredible guy. But these are all people that we know when they go to office, they're going to be the same person, because it does come back down to that character. Solid conservative principles are awesome, but not everybody with solid conservative principles has solid character, and I believe you do. So with that, I'm going to pass it on to Dan. I know, Dan, when I said the words Red Skelton, I know that your heart skipped a beat, because he's absolutely one of your favorites. In fact, the reason why we play him each week is because of you. So I'm going to pass it on to you to continue the conversation with Michael. We've got Michael Dreikorn running for Florida. It's District 19. I want to give out the website real quick before we pass it on. It's Dreikorn for Congress. That's DreikornForCongress.com. Make sure you go. Everything's there. Is Twitter and everything. His Twitter is at FLCD19. Make sure you like his Facebook page. Michael, one of the things about our audience is a bulk of them are active in the grassroots. So we're hoping that a lot of people will go check you out and help tweet, help share the information. And if you're there in Florida on the ground, get in contact with Michael and say, I can help. I can put a yard sign out. I can make phone calls for you. I can help spread the word. So with that, Michael, Dan, I'm going to pass it to you.
Oh, yeah. I love that Red Skelton skit. I was honored enough to have heard it the first time around back in 69, and it's when I'm one of the early boomers. I started arguing politics back, matter of fact, in 69 was the first time I really started arguing. It was during the McGovern-Nixon race and I had one of my teachers screaming at me because I was a pro-Nixon person, which was, you know, a few years ago. But anyway, one more little off the topic, but my dad went through Charlie too. Punta Gorda was ground zero, and it looked like a war zone. And boy, what a year you picked to move it down here.
Yeah, that was terrible. But you know, it was a test. It was a test because I could have very easily left. But, I this was the first time in my entire life that I got to pick where I was going to live. And, when I commit myself to something, I follow through. And 11 years later now, almost 11, you know, it's I don't regret it.
Oh, it's a great state. I love Florida. I used to sail professionally and got to meet some interesting people. It was... I was down in the mid-90s. I was in Key West and sat down at a bar after sailing all day. And Jimmy Buffett walked into, it just happened to be the Schooner Wharf.
Yeah, I know exactly where it's at.
Okay, you know, that small little, I think it was a light blue painted building. That was Jimmy Buffett's recording studio.
Yeah, it looks like a little ice box.
Yeah.
I know it very well. Yeah, I like Key West. It's Key West, for those that have never been there, I highly encourage it. Depending on family friendliness, though, you need to pick your times.
Right, definitely. I'm kind of migrating a little further north, like to... Lime Key or Marathon, because it's getting too crowded in Key West. But if I can get through this heart thing, I'd like to move down there. But right now,
you know, Key West might be your cure.
I mean, tell you the truth, my love, I grew up sailing. First time I was on a sailboat, I was like knee-high to a grasshopper and became a competitive sailboat racer up in Newport, Rhode Island, and during the height of my time, I was right up there with the big league. I mean, I know Dennis Conner very well, and Kenny Reed and I used to, I don't know if you know any sailors, but...
Yeah, I know the names. I know the names. You know, the challenge about being on the Gulf Coast, though, is the water gets skinny.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, when you can walk out 10 miles and still be out just...
Pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, not that bad, but it's pretty bad. You have to get pretty far offshore before... you have any water underneath you.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the West Coast, but...
Oh, I don't think it's a problem, because it means our water's nice and warm. So if you like your beer cold and your grill warm, you know, Southwest Florida is a great place to do it, and you can do it in the water.
Oh, that's what I love. I mean, I'm spoiled now. If the water's not 85 degrees plus, I don't even bother getting in it.
Right.
But it's, you know, when you're talking about state sovereignty, I'm a big, big history fan, and the Constitution, I've read the Federalist Papers probably 6 or 7 times, and, you know, I know the Constitution pretty much inside and out, and I'm to the point where, you know, Article 5 does not sound all that bad. And people don't understand Article 5 because they think it's throwing out our Constitution. And it really isn't. It's kind of rebooting the Constitution. You know, taking a lot of the crap away And, you know, I would love to, you were talking about term limits.
Mm-hmm.
I want term limits on the Supreme Court as well.
Oh, definitely, 20 years. If they got more than 20 years, they're getting stale. But you bring up a good thing, because Article 5, for those that are not familiar, is really where they talk about the states and the two-thirds of the states, the convention of the states. So, you know, if our Congress isn't doing what they need to be doing with regards to maintaining the Constitution, because from time to time it requires amendment, you know, we have the convention of the states. And that's in the process right now.
You know, I would love to see an Article 5 convention so we could turn around to Congress and say, you know, wake up, get off your duff, and start doing your job. I mean, since Obama got into office, what have we heard? Nothing.
Yeah. I hear you. But you know what? If the convention of the states comes with some risk, because that is not a pure process either, because, you know, it can be corrupted by those who are actually convening it. So we got to be really careful when we do something like that. And Phyllis Schlafly talks about that with regards to the risk. So we got to listen to some of her advice. This November, every voter in America gets the opportunity to pick a congressman or congresswoman. Make sure you're picking one that's not being paid by the PACs. Make sure you're picking one that represents your morals and your ethics and your principles and that of the, and is a defender of the Constitution. They have to have read it to defend it.
I know. And it's unfortunate, Congressman. Well, he won't even talk to me anymore.
Well, see, then how can he represent? You're a dissenting voice.
I call them up on things.
Well, that's constituency outreach. You have to listen to the constituents in order to be relative as a representative. And the further these people become elitist, you know, they're becoming almost a monarchy. The closer they become to a monarchy, the closer we become to tyranny. Tyranny, and we need to resolve ourselves that we're going to fight against tyranny.
I agree 300%, and, you know, this guy obviously is not used to having people stand up against him, because Pasco County, you know, we're Republican, but the problem is people think that if you're a Republican, you're 100% on their side. And this guy hasn't stood up and done a damn thing.
And get rid of him.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to find somebody who has the gumption and the moral fiber. I mean, if you get a chance, get over to my webpage and start reading back on my posts, because I post every day.
But here's the challenge. Here's the challenge. We make it so difficult for the regular citizen to stand up and run an election. In order for me to stand up now and do this race, I had to sacrifice. I had to spend all the cash I have to run in this race. And you know what? It's worth it. I'd do it again. But it's almost becoming to the point, if you don't have the money, you're not worthy of representing. And that's crazy.
Yeah, it is an economic thing today. And thank God, actually, for the Internet now, because now we have other ways to reach out to the people. But right, it is very, very much an economic thing. And,
yeah, but we live in Florida, and a good portion of our population is elderly. They're not on the Internet. Those are the ones I'm struggling with to reach to.
I agree with you. I mean, well, everybody's over, seems like over 80. And then
a little silver dot behind a silver behind a steering wheel. Yep.
Exactly. Or those little blue-haired old lady driving 20 miles an hour.
That's
nuts.
Right. And you know, Michael, that's something else that we talk about every week on this show. You know, it's one thing to elect good people and send them to Washington, D.C., to send them to the state houses, to send them to some of these even more local races. But that's only half of the battle. The other half of the battle is we got to wake up a bunch of uninformed voters. Now, I'm a firm believer that, that part of that job lies on the candidate. We've got a lot of candidates that, that want to sit in the office, and they just want to watch the numbers roll in, play the game, and hope they get enough votes. And then we've got other candidates that are willing to get out and talk to the voters. And we need to, and I've been struggling with this for a year. Jennifer and Dan will tell you this. All three of us are Frederick Douglass Republicans because I believe that K. Carl Smith's Frederick Douglass methodology pushes people to go out and talk to people that don't normally talk about politics. Because I believe if you take any 100 people in the United States and put them all in a room, I believe if we really started talking about basic principles of smaller government, of the founding fathers, our support of the founding fathers, the basic principles that we stand on, our basic conservative principles, I believe that 90% of the people would agree with us. But the problem is we've got a bunch of people in this country. They come home from work. They sit down on the couch. They watch sitcoms. They couldn't tell you what Benghazi means. They have no clue as to what that means. Now, a lot of times, you know, we've got blog talk, and we've got Facebook, and we've got Twitter, and we've got our blogs, and we're able to communicate, but a lot of times we're communicating with the choir. We've got to get out, and we've got to wake up the uninformed voters. Now, I believe they are waking up. I know they're waking up because I've been talking politics with my sister ever since she was a child, and she's always kind of sat back and listened and put up with her big brother who likes to talk about politics. But I've watched her in the last 3 years, starting with seeing some of the results of Barack Obama and his presidency, and then especially this last year seeing what's going on with Common Core now that she's got children. And she's awake. In fact, I would almost call her an activist. And I believe we've got a lot of people in this country that are waking up like that, but we've got to wake up a whole lot more, and we've got to get to those people. You got to get to those people in Florida that don't use the computer. And so I want to ask you, Michael, how I know you're doing it because I just know you're doing it. But how are you doing that? And how do we help our candidates get out and talk to these people who don't pay attention to politics? They've been told for 40, 50 years those two topics you don't talk about. You don't talk about religion, and you don't talk about politics. The left has foisted that lie upon us. How do we overcome that? How do we wake these people up? How do we get the message out to the people that aren't paying attention to what's going on? Because I believe when we do, I believe that the tide will be one great big huge wave.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the obvious thing is leveraging social media, but you know, as we all know, that's only a certain percentage of people. The you know, what I've found, it's really dependent on your demographics too. But being here in Southwest Florida, we do have a very aging community. I don't like to include myself in that yet, but reality is what it is. You know, one of the things I've done is, you know, and we most of us frequently ignore them, is reaching out to those seniors. You know, we forget just how much contribution they have provided us in this society. You know, they are the greatest generation, and they have so much wisdom that, you know, they're willing to share, that you just have to get to them because they can't get to you anymore. So I've been going to, like, to assisted living communities where you have a cluster of, you know, 40, 50 seniors that, you know, they're dying for somebody to visit with them. And you know what? They vote. They're eager to listen, and they'll vote. So you extend the olive branch to say, yes, we appreciate you, and you make them part of the process. You know, and the other part, there's other demographics that we ignore, and you know, there's minorities that we in different groups of our society that we just don't pay attention to. So you have to make a conscious effort to step outside your norm and think about who are the constituents. They're not just the people that look like you in the mirror. It's everybody.
And you need to understand that some of these constituents have special interests. They have special needs. And you have to keep an open ear to what that is, because if you have a closed mind, you're not listening. So I'm finding burning up my shoe leather is the most productive thing I can do. And you know, wearing out the skin on my right hand, because I'm shaking a lot.
Well, and you know what? Let me tell you, that's the way Texas politics works. These candidates out here that are running, they're burning up shoe leather. They get together on the weekend with their grassroots support, and they knock doors. They get out and make phone calls, and I'm just a firm believer that when we wake up the electorate, when we wake people up and make them really realize where we're going, we're so comfortable. History bears this out, folks. When a society gets comfortable, that's when things fall apart. I'm a teacher of Old Testament history. I've been teaching the Old Testament for 30 years. The book of Judges will teach you when things get good, people forget God. When people forget God, things fall apart. And when things fall apart, man ends up enslaved. And then he goes back to God and says, save me. And you work your way back out of it. And pretty soon things are comfortable and you keep going in that cycle. And we're heading in the wrong direction, partly because we're comfortable. But anyways, I want to pass it on down. I know Jennifer's got some more questions and some more discussion. Jennifer, I'm really jealous of you right now because you've been traveling around the country a little bit. You've got to go to Georgia and got to go to Tennessee. I spent a New Year's Eve in Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge. It is beautiful there. I really wish I could have seen it like you did, more in the spring than in the freezing cold winter. But it's good to have you back home. So with that, I'll pass it back down to Jennifer.
You know, we're coming up on April 15th. You know, and you were talking about reaching across the aisles. You know, we have a country that is being taxed to death. And I was talking with the president in Alabama of the Fair Tax here, there is just so much that we could do if we were to remove the current tax code. I love the Fair Tax. I wanted to get your take on that, and what do you think would be your proposal of what we should do?
Yeah, I mean, I love the fair tax. Let me just make sure all the listeners understand the difference between a fair tax and an income tax. You know, the income tax is based on your actual income, and that includes flat taxes. But a fair tax is essentially a consumption tax. It's essentially based on our spending. So if we no longer penalize Americans by the amount of money they make, and if we no longer give 40 to 50% of our Americans a free ride because they don't pay any income tax, and by just saying we're getting rid of the tax code, first off, it's going to significantly improve our efficiencies in business, because think about how many tax preparers you're going to be able to go find new jobs now, and how many people at the IRS are going to be productive in some sort of different function other than auditing and reviewing our documents. But, you know, now people are going to have all that extra money in their pocket, and they're going to be able to spend it. Now, a fair tax, though, the number is the big challenge. There's two things. One is establishing what's the right percentage of a fair tax or a value-added tax based on consumption, and how are you going to honestly collect it? Because there is so much trade in this country that's under the table and through the internet. So it's going to take. It's not a simple thing to do, but if we lay all the cards on the table and think it through constructively as a process, and we develop a plan for it, we can do it. And you know, the income tax as we know it, it hasn't been around forever. You know, this is a thing, you know, that happened in the 1900s, you know, as an amendment to the Constitution. You know, if we changed the, and matter of fact, it was a little over 100 years ago, right? So maybe it's time to move on to a new model of providing revenue for this country.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more.
You know, that's right. And you know, that's a huge one to me. I'll tell you why. I hate to go back to Herman Cain so much tonight, but it just happens to take us that way. You know, when Herman Cain had 999, and I liked 999, it was kind of basically Jack Kemp's 10-10-10 that he had under Ronald Reagan that they were kind of working on. But the thing, I learned a couple of things about the tax code through studying that. And one thing that I learned was embedded taxes. And you know, folks, when it all comes down to it, when we have a major change, when we throw away that 80,000-page tax code and we replace it with something simpler and we pull those embedded taxes out so that you know exactly what is in your good, it makes a big difference. And Herman Cain always said this, when you get rid of that crazy slavery embedded tax code that we've got right now, it would be the largest shift of power from the government back to the people. And so I'm a firm believer that it's something that's huge. I think it's a very, very difficult thing for Washington to grab their hands around and get hold and fix it. But I've never been afraid of grabbing something hard and trying to get it fixed. I think that's just flat out very, very important. You know, as we go on, we've got about four, I don't know how much time you've got with us, Michael. We generally go 2 hours. I always let the candidate know, as long as we've got you, we'd love to keep you. If you have to back at any point and say, it's time, I've got to go to bed or I got something to do, you know, of course we'll let you. But as we go on, I want us to shift onto some of these other issues. We talked a little bit about gun control. We talked a little bit about the Second Amendment. We've talked a little bit about taxes. But, you know, there's some stuff going on right now in our country that really, really scares me. When I was a kid, they used to say, one of these days, Scott, they're going to embed us with chips and put a chip in our brain. Well, they didn't have to do that because I got my cell phone. I got an iPhone, and I carry it everywhere I go, and I use it, and my life has gone into there. I use my Facebook on it. I'm carrying around 4 or 5 chips. They didn't have to embed them in me. But our government, through the NSA, through the IRS, through some of these major agencies, are absolutely walking all over our rights to privacy. And basically, so far, not really anything's being done about it. And it's getting worse, and it's getting worse. You know, I watch a lot of CSI. I like CSI. I like cop shows. And the more I'm learning about what's going on, and the more I'm watching what's going on the shows, I realize we've kind of been programmed to just accept some of these things. Some of these things are involved in the plots of the cop shows we've been watching. And, boy, I'm a firm believer in catching the bad guy. And I'm a firm believer in giving our authorities the ability to do the job. But it seems more and more they're just kind of searching through stuff, rifling through stuff in order to find stuff. It's just horrendous right now, our lack of privacy. When I get on the computer, I just always assume that there's somebody watching. Now, I'm jokingly, some of that's not too bad. Actually, if NSA and if the White House would like to watch what I'm doing on the Internet and read my posts and listen to our blog talk shows, that would be great. Maybe they might learn something. But as Michael Drankern goes to Congress, boy, how do we fight some of these privacy issues that we've been facing over the last few years that all of a sudden, I mean, it's just caught up with us like nobody's business.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's when we get outside of the rules as a government is where we get into our problems. The Constitution, you know, they never thought about the technology, you know, our founding fathers that we have today. But they did contemplate about the powers that we've given them with regards to, you know, searches of our premises and our information, and they contemplated getting a warrant, and you know there are judges on call 24/7 that the federal government can exercise or even the state governments if need be to go obtain with probable cause a warrant. Now, what's happened is our federal agencies, you know, they go unchecked. Some will say it's illegal for Congress to do oversight on a federal agency. That really, that Congress's only job is to write the laws that the agency has to comply with and to give them the appropriate amount of budget. I disagree.
I think there's a performance responsibility of Congress as well. And that performance is making sure that they fulfill their mission, but also that they're not violating the rights of the people as contemplated in the Constitution. That needs to be monitored by the representatives you send. But it gets back to the character issue. If you have representatives in any level of government that don't have the willingness and the capacity to stand up for what's right, you'll never get it. You'll never get what's right. So, and they also have to know what the rules are. So if you don't know the Constitution, really, folks, it's not that big. You can read it in a couple of hours, right? So just we need to hold our representatives accountable for their ability to lead, you know, and to their capacity to understand what the rules are. And then make sure the federal government does it. And if they don't, then you know what? The federal government are employees of the people. You know, we pay them through a salary. So if they're not doing the job, you're fired. And by the way, if you ever get in front of me and plead the fifth in Congress, I'm putting you in contempt of Congress. And I don't care if you've got your Fifth Amendment right. If you're a federal employee and you do that, I'm sorry, you're doing it as a violation of our tax dollars. You're doing it as a violation of the public trust. And you know what? When I was in the military, I gave up a lot of my rights under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. We need to hold our federal bureaucrats to that same level of diligence.
Well, I just have to agree with you. And a lot of this stuff, it all comes back down to just some common sense. I'd like to just flat out see some common sense back up in there. You really hit on one thing. We haven't really gone into it a lot. We've brought it up a couple of times, and that's term limits. And I love self-imposed term limits. I love it when a candidate says, I'm not going to become a career politician. I want to go serve. I want to go serve my country in Washington, D.C., or I want to go serve my country at the State House. I want to do some good things, and then I want to go home. I'm a believer in term limits. Now, I also believe that you got to fix some of the lobbying problems alongside setting up term limits. Otherwise, you got a bunch of unexperienced candidates with a bunch of experienced lobbyists, and that kind of scares me as well. But, you know, it seems to me that even some of our better politicians, some of the people that we would think would be awesome, the longer that they spend there, the more they lose their common sense. I've got a huge respect for John McCain for what he did for our country when he was in the military and when he was in Vietnam. And I believe when it all comes down to it, he's a good man. But I just believe he's been there so long that he doesn't see the world from where you and I see the world. Like you said, you're grassroots, Michael. We need grassroots candidates. While we're saying grassroots candidates, we'll mention Connie Burton here in Texas, running for our state Senate. She's replacing Wendy Davis, who thinks that she can be governor of Texas. That doesn't look like that's going to happen, but she's grassroots. And Michael, you've impressed me, and I know because I'm talking with Jennifer and Dan on the backside, you've impressed them as well. Exactly what I've been looking at over the last couple of weeks as I've been looking at your website and chatting around with people in Florida. But as much confidence as I've got in you going to Washington, D.C. and coming out the same man, I know that just human nature, if you're there for 30 years, You're not going to be as effective a congressman 30 years from now as you will when you get there. And so I just have to agree with that 100%. Dan Wilson, I'm going to pass it back down to you, my friend.
Okay, great. Oops, sorry about that. I agree 100%. I think most of the people... If we had term limits, we would force younger people in there, into Congress. And people like that, as you were mentioning, John McCain, what he did in Vietnam was phenomenal. I mean, he spent, 7 years in the Hanoi Hilton? And... You know, many of his fellow POWs there, you know, owe their lives to him. And for that, you know, we can never repay that. He also got himself blown up on the USS Forrestal when a Sunni missile short-circuited and fired and hit his jet. And he came out of that. That's right before he went on to the USS Constellation. But anyway, you know, we've had some great people over the years. But I think what happens is that they start building these little empires. And they stop thinking of the people. And they start thinking more of themselves. And, you know, if you play your cards right, you know, these lobbyists will give you a heck of a lot of money. And this is why I'm also for auditing everybody in office every year, because it's all of a sudden you see somebody like, let's say, Nancy Pelosi on a $250,000 a year job. She, in under a year and a half, brought her net worth to over $12 million.
Right, so follow the money.
So follow the money, exactly.
Right,
and
so you get people that are up there and they start investing. Remember, Congress does not have the same liability as the rest of the citizens when it comes to insider trading. So, you know, and that has to change, by the way. But they can easily, you know, influence through a vote how their stock is going to perform. You know, so if they have energy stocks, you know, they may just pass that fracking bill. And, by the way, fracking's not a bad thing if it's done responsibly, right? So, you know, we need to have independency but on our energy policy. But the thing is that we get people in position representing us that don't have a profession other than politician. Nobody should have the job title as a professional politician. They should be butchers and bakers and candlestick makers, because they should go up there, do their job, and have the incentive to go home and get back to what they were doing before they got there. But if they don't have a profession, where's the incentive to leave? They know nothing else.
Exactly. And the other problem is it seems that most of our politicians today are attorneys. And what happened is that they make it look like it's so technically advanced that the average person could not operate unless they had a law degree, and which is a crock of baloney. You know, I taught myself politics. My degree is in economics, and I taught politics to myself in a matter of a very short period of time, and it's not that complex. As a matter of fact, most of it's common sense.
Yeah, and you know, it's defined in the Constitution, too. All the rules that we make on top of that are the complexity. Get rid of all the complexity and get back to the basics.
Well, I hate these writers also.
Yeah,
they take these things, you know, like on the Second Amendment. You know, you have to have all these, background checks before you can own an automatic weapon. You know something? If you want to put all that crap into the Second Amendment, then pass another amendment. Do it the right way. You know, our Constitution was built up that way, is that if you want to make changes, you don't add a rider which, you know, I got into an argument with somebody the other day. He said, oh, that's not a writer. Yeah, it is. You know, call a sheep, you know, by what it is. And they keep on adding all these little things to the Constitution that actually nullifies the Constitution itself. You know, I'm for, not only for, you know, the Second Amendment, but, you know, they take the, you know, politicians take the Constitution and they take it around and they make the Second Amendment, let's say, and they make it look like it's for hunting. And the Constitution, if you read the Second Amendment, it's to protect the sovereignty of the individual state. That's the first part of it. That's why we had armories all over the place. It was strictly, you know, it was more of a protection thing than it was, you know, to go on hunting. And, you know, they totally redesigned the Constitution, the Second Amendment, to be something it has nothing to do with. And this is what we need, is we need politicians who are going to stand there and say that, you know, the Second Amendment is protection of state sovereignty.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, the Second Amendment has 27 words in it. And what happens is that we write hundreds of thousands of words of interpretation. And we overcomplicate what the Founding Fathers meant. You know, and it does two things. You're exactly right. It does talk about a well-regulated militia. You know, and that the purpose of that was to ensure the security of a free state. We've got 50 of those. So we should have 50 militias. You know, and hypothetically, that's our National Guard. Now, but the second part is the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's the entire Second Amendment right there. So the people's rights. There's nothing in there that talks about the limitations of how many bullets I can have in a clip. It doesn't talk about, you know, how long the barrel of my rifle can be or how short. You know, the thing is that we allow regulation to be developed, you know, and sometimes, you know, there is good regulation, and then there's regulation that infringes on our rights, that serves no purpose. You know, and that's where we get to the point where we have to enact the third part of our system of government, and that's the judicial system, and that's not it's not something that Congress has used very well, but they really need to start doing it. We need to start suing as a congressperson or a senator, the federal agencies for impeding on the people's rights, because that's probably the only way that we're going to get anything done when we're in a stalemate with our executive branch. You know, when the president doesn't want to listen, we're going to have to sue him because we can't get the votes through the Senate.
Right. I mean, we got to do something. I mean, I've been looking at the Supreme Court is basically nothing but a political tool today. It's, you know, if it's more, it has more liberal justices, they just support whoever the, you know, a liberal president. And they aren't doing their job. They're going around. They're actually even passing laws. And the federal government does not, if you read the Constitution, I mean, the federal government has very specific tasks that it is supposed to do. And one of them is not passing laws.
Right. Well, I mean, it's through the judicial interpretation, becomes a president established essentially becomes the law or the standard for future judgments to be made or rendered. And you're right. I mean, that was not the intent. But I think what we need to do is be clear through our Constitution in certain areas. But we got to be very careful when we start messing around with amending the Constitution, because you know we have to always consider what future interpretations are going to be made upon those changes. You know, who would have thought 200 and some odd years ago that we'd be talking about the things we're talking about today with regards to technology and NSA? You know, they never contemplated that, but they did contemplate the preservation of our rights. And that's where they came up with the requirement for a warrant from a judge.
Right. I mean, I agree with you. 200, 250 years ago, they couldn't imagine what we have today. But the one thing I thought they were brilliant about is that they did make the Constitution so it could be altered You know, we grew through the amendment process. We could make these changes. And instead, the federal government said, let's just go around it. And that's our biggest problem today, is that we're actually bypassing the Constitution.
Right.
And
so what are we going to do about it?
Well, this is where I agree with you on the suing department, is that if any group tries to bypass the Constitution, we should go right after them and, you know, immediately that should be into a litigation issue because we can't continue on like this. Or the Constitution is going to be nothing but a piece of paper.
Yeah, yeah. I always like using the analogy of the boiling frog. You know, if you put a frog into a hot boiling pot of water, they're gonna go in and they're gonna jump right back out because they're gonna know it's hot and they're not gonna like it. But if you put a frog in a pot of water that's room temperature, you know, he's gonna just kind of swim around in there and be seventh heaven. And you gradually turn that heat up, you know, in a few minutes, you're going to have one cooked frog. That's what the government has been doing to us in this administration. They have been slowly eroding our rights through their reinterpretation of what they think is right and wrong, and slowly infringing upon us. And before we know it, we're going to be a cooked frog.
Mm-hmm. I mean, exactly. This is why I got involved is I mentioned my health, but I have grandchildren, and they're going to have grandchildren, and I want them to have the same liberties that I had growing up. You know, growing up in the 60s, yeah, we had a lot of turmoil and everything like that. But you know something? I could go out and not fear being abducted or anything like that. And it was because we had our Constitution. We had our amendments that were still functional. I mean, you didn't
know. We were
a
different culture, though, too. We were a much different culture back then. You know, and that was before we had this uncontrolled immigration issue. So we have to look at the issues that we're confronted with, not just from one perspective, but from multiple vantage points, because there's no one causation for the problem that we're in right now. There's a lot of problems. There are a lot of things that are contributing to our current state.
No, I...
There is, and I'll tell you, folks, we're coming up on 18 minutes up to the hour, so we've got to start winding ourselves down and around to our closing remarks. You know, we've had good discussion tonight because these things are important. They're important, folks, for the future of our country. I happen to love this country. I happen to love our history. Have we had some bad times? Oh, yeah, we have. There's not a nation that's ever I've never stood on this earth that didn't have some problems and things in its past. But I'm a firm believer that this country has done greater things than any other nation before. We have pulled people out of poverty. We spend more money, our private money. We spend more money than the government even sends, helping people that are in need. We've got a standard of living that is absolutely insane. A lot of times I like to talk about carpet because I've been to foreign countries. I've been to countries that are third world countries. And there's places in this world where people go live to be 80 or 90 years old and have never seen carpet, something that we just take for granted. I've been down into Mexico where people don't have glass for windows and they've got dirt floors. We've got a great country. We've got a great history. When those pilgrims in 1620 got on that old rickety old boat and started sailing across that big body of water and landed here with nothing, we traveled 2,000 miles from California to Texas here 3 months ago. But when we landed here, we had a house that was already set up with the electricity on. And when we got the truck here, we parked it, got in the car, and we went to a restaurant and ate. Those pilgrims and those strangers, they showed up, and there was nothing. And we went from there to where we are right now. And I'm a firm believer that we don't need fundamental change. Do we need to change some things? Oh, yeah, we do. We need to change some things in Washington, D.C. But our school systems, we've got some teachers that absolutely give their lives in order to teach our young people. We've got the greatest health care setup that ever have ever stood. We've got incredible hospitals and incredible doctors. We've got a great thing going on, and we want to keep it that way. We've got freedom, and we've got liberty. We can walk down the street, and the government doesn't have the right to just stop us and ask us where we're going. We've got a country where that you can start with nothing. And if you've got a great idea and you're a hard worker, you can end up retiring with a lot of money and being wealthy and very comfortable. A lot of places you can't do that. A lot of places, if you're born poor, you're just stuck poor. We've got great opportunities in this country. And so that's why we do what we do. We keep on keeping on. We continue to fight and support great candidates. And I'm going to say it again, Michael, all three of us, we really like you. And we're going to continue to give you as much support as you can. Let me tell you, the three of us are grassroots activists. And if you need anything spread, you let us know. You've got a newspaper article comes out about you and you need it spread, you let us know. We're going to continue to talk about you. I do want to ask you this. This is the one thing I didn't look for. Are you in a primary, or are you heading towards the general?
No, this is a primary, and it's incredibly contested right now. And it's on the 22nd of this month.
The 22nd of this month, okay, and we're going to we'll give you every bit of help we can, and then we'll get you past that primary and help you on into November, because I believe it's important.
Actually, the general is in June. The general is in June. So this is unique. We have a primary April, and we have a general in June, and then we have another primary for the same job again in August and another general in November.
Oh my goodness! You guys are crazy. You're in Texas down there, Dan. Now you know.
Oh yeah.
I've been saying, Michael. I've been saying for the last few weeks, Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas, and everybody in Texas loves their politics. So we can't just have a primary and a general. We got to have all these runoffs, so we get another election out of the cycle. But you're getting four out, so that's all right. It makes it interesting. We're going to continue. We're going to give you all the support we can because it's important. It is important for my three nieces. I'm 45 years old. I've lived probably about half of my life if I live to be 90. I've seen some great years, but they've got a long life ahead of them, and I want them to live free. I want them to live happy, and I want them to live with the benefits of this great country that I have. So with that, we're going to start heading up into our closing remarks. We'll pass it around table one more time. I do want to say, remember, go to Michael's webpage. It's Dreikorn for Congress. It's Dreikorn forcongress.com. Go find his Twitter page. Go find his Facebook page. And do some likes and do some sharing. Do some retweeting. If you can help by supporting financially, click that donate button. It's important, too. I wish it didn't take so much money to make the world go around, but it does take money to make the world go around. And I believe it's important, Michael, the way you are running, that you are looking to be paying for this through the individual as opposed to having a bunch of people with big money turning around and supporting you that are going to have their hand out once you get to Washington, D.C. That's how we keep power back to the people, folks. So click that donate button if you can. I want to take this opportunity to also mention we got some other great shows here on Contending for Truth Radio. Dan and I will be Saturday symposium. It's going to be mostly Dan as far as it goes. We're going to have Bob Struble on again that we had on a couple of weeks ago. A great man, a historian, a teacher, a writer, and a man, some great conversation, going to talk about some great things again. I'll be doing the show from Corsicana, Texas at the rally, the I Do Not Consent rally. Four different counties' tea parties are going to be coming together. We're going to have some great guests. My good friend Michael Smith will be up on stage. Looking forward to that. I'm going to go down Friday. We're going to eat some steak, and we're going to go visit a couple of old cemeteries. Dan, you're going to be jealous because Michael's got great-grandfathers, great-great-great-great-grandfathers who were at the Battle of San Jacinto. And they are buried down there. So we're going to go see a couple of old cemeteries, going to do some studying up on some Texas history. That's going to be exciting. And then I'm going to do the show with Dan Saturday from the rally itself. I'll be trying to control this whole thing on my cell phone. Hope everything works all right. But I'll be mostly giving it over to Dan and Bob to have the conversation for that. So that's Saturday on our Saturday symposium with Dan Wilson. And don't forget, folks, on Friday, the whole reason Contending for Truth Radio is around ladies' Bible class. I've been teaching the ladies Old Testament history for about 5 years now in Springville, California. When we got ready to move to Texas, it was a very hard decision to make for that ladies' Bible class. But technology enables me to continue to teach that class. I teach it from the kitchen table here in Mesquite, Texas, and the ladies set up the laptop on the table in Springville, California, and we are continuing to wander through the Old Testament history. We just finished Old King Ahab. He just died, and we just finished the book of 1 Kings. We're going to start the second book of 2 Kings. It's been Elijah and Ahab, and now we're going to go to Elisha and Ahab's descendants. And it's a fascinating period in the Old Testament history. We're going to start leading on to where those top 10 tribes are taken into Assyrian captivity. So that's every Friday at 10:30 California time, 11:30 Mountain time, 12:30 Texas time, and 1:30 Florida time. We'll be doing that. And folks, something really special has been going on, and I've been waiting to announce this until we got it all confirmed and everything all down. I've been saying it was going to be on Monday nights, but I think we just made a change this week. It's going to be on Thursday nights. Rodney Lee Conover and Scott Osborne are going on the air together, and we will start our show hopefully this Thursday. Rodney and I are going to get on the radio and have fun. I'm excited about this. Rodney's been a professional radio show host on his own show for quite a few years. He wrote for Rush Limbaugh for about 6 years. We've had him on this show quite a few times, and all of us supported his candidacy when he was running for Congress. He's a great man. I love him dearly. He's a good friend. He went from giving a guy a little bit of grassroots Herman Cain love to becoming somebody that's become a friend. And I am looking forward to this. We've had this in the works for a few weeks now. Of course, Rodney's dad isn't doing good. We want to keep him in our prayers. But it looks like we're going to start doing that this next Thursday. It'll be about the same time as this show, 9 o'clock Texas time, 10 o'clock Eastern time, and it'll be Rodney Lee Conover and Scott Osborne talking about politics each week and having fun. Rodney's a hilarious guy, did stand-up comedy for years, wrote for some important people, wrote for Ann Coulter for a long time, writes for Joe the Plumber right now, and I know of very few that can communicate. Michael, you talked about communication and how important it is a while ago. Rodney Lee Conover has got the communication down. It's going to be really exciting. So that's our brand new show here on Contending for Truth Radio. We're looking forward to that as we go on. We're looking forward to our primaries. We want to always throw a shout out to Sid Miller, running for Agricultural Commissioner here in Texas. My good friend, I'm going to tell you, he just won the latest straw poll, 85 points to 15 points. Looks like he's going to win this runoff. If he wins this runoff, he's got it. I cannot wait, folks. They got these little stickers on the gas stations, on the gas pumps here in Texas, and they're done by the Agricultural Commissioner. I cannot wait until next January when those stickers say Sid Miller. We got Connie Burton running for State Senate. We keep supporting her. Going to give her a big shout-out, and another big shout-out for my good friend Dave Souza running for Commissioner. In El Dorado County, up there near Sacramento, for the Board of Supervisors. I'm sorry, not Commissioner, for the Board of Supervisors. Another one that's important we're going to mention is Wayne Christian. Just got to know him. You know, the Railroad Commission job here in Texas is an important one, but it has nothing to do with railroads. But it does have to do with the EPA and the oil industry. Good man. Been looking at him. We're going to start giving him our support. And, of course, Michael Dreikorn that we've got on tonight, we're going to continue to give him his support all the way through this, get you through four elections. I think that's kind of neat. So, Michael, I want to pass it back to you for any concluding remarks that you have, and then we'll pass it on down to Dan and on to Jennifer, and we'll round it out. It should be at the top of the hour.
Well, it sounds great, Scott. You know, thanks, you know, for the opportunity to speak with your listeners and the rest of your co-hosts. I mean, this is what it means to get out there and spread the word and get people engaged again. You know, this concept of being American is currently at risk. What we grew up, you know, understanding, you know, what it meant as far as, you know, ethics and responsibilities and mannerism, that's foreign. That has become very foreign to most people today. If you want to reclaim that, you got to do it at the grassroots. You got to get through the money, folks, and you got to get to the people who have the sincerity to stand up and make a difference and do it for all the right reasons, not for self-enrichment, but rather for doing it for the people and for future generations. I'm running on that platform. I'm running on the platform that says we got to get back to the basics, and I want to do this for all the right reasons. I'm the real deal. I'd be honored if you took a look at my website at www.drycornforcongress.com. And keep in mind that this isn't just District 19 in Southwest Florida. This year, we've got to make sure we put the right people in Congress. And when we vote for the Senate, we need to make sure we put the right conservative people in the Senate. And in 2016, folks, it's not that far away. We need to get the right executive leader in there. Let's make sure we're all engaged in the vetting process now. So I'll turn it back to you guys, and it's been a real honor to spend the last 2 hours with you.
Oh, it's been great, and I'll pass it to you.
I agree, Michael. The whole thing is we do have to get back to our origins. I've been pushing very, very hard to get people to start bringing God back into our country and to go back to what our founding fathers believed. And, you know, the term limits, for instance, they are something that our founding fathers saw the being a politician as not only an obligation but as an honor, and they said that, you know, Washington at the end of his second term said, you know, many people wanted him to be king, and he said no. It's time for me to step down and go back home. And Jefferson and Madison, Adams, they all followed the same suit. No, actually, they followed it right up to FDR. And there was an honor system, and we've lost that. Then there became the age of the professional politician, and they all seem to be attorneys, so they will not do anything against their friends. So we're having a lot of problems with litigations, and we got a lot of messes going on in this country right now. And it's time to return to our origins. I love the Benjamin Franklin's address to Congress when he said, you know, when we were going against the British, we were on our hands and knees, you know, every day praying to God for our salvation. And now we've become too good for God. And that's very, very true. And if you look at what our founding fathers gave, the people, the signers of the Declaration of Independence, all but five lost pretty much everything they had. And they were pretty wealthy men. And four of them died, actually, in the Revolution. And they don't understand the sacrifices. And we have to turn around at the people today and understand that our process of our elections are not only an obligation, it's our duty. And it means more than walking up to a voting booth and pushing a name you recognize. You have to do some research into who the person is and what, you know, what they stand for. We need people with honor and integrity who have the ability to stand up for what they believe and what their constituents want. But today we have, as soon as they get any opposition, they back right down. And we need people who have the conviction to stand up for what's right and what their constituents believe in. I have a congressman now who, because I upset him, he won't even talk to me. And that's wrong. I've called his office for meetings, and he refuses to even talk to me. And that's his job. I'm one of his constituents, and he refuses to even do his job. And this is, you know, we need to change this and get these people out of office who are just sitting there because it's their job today. And I'm 100% for your term limits. And, you know, up here, I wish you moved just a little further north.
You're welcome down here. Come on down.
Believe me, I might very, very well. I'm getting sick of sinkholes up here. Seems like every street has a sinkhole, and Pasco County has the most sinkholes in the entire state. So, and we're known as the sinkhole capital of the world, so... you might be seeing me as a neighbor.
You're welcome. Come on down.
I definitely will think about it. Definitely. I'm getting sick of it up here. But anyway, it's, you know, we need the changes. We need the grassroots people. We need more people like you who are willing to stand up and say, this is right or this is wrong. And we need to bring our Constitution back to where it was meant to be and not where it is today. And going to require a lot of work and a big time cleaning the house.
And it's going to require people to vote for these representatives too. Because if they vote for them, that sends the message and other people will start running.
Right, and that's what I'm hoping that's going to happen with this election, is that we're going to send a clear message saying, you know, this is what we want. And it has to happen on both sides of the street. Because, you know, you listen to John F. Kennedy, you know, he was saying, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. See, even the left understood that back then. And we need both sides to reboot and get back to where it used to be. And we need politicians on both sides who are going to argue different sides of the Constitution. That's great. We don't have that right now. We either have so far left or so far right, it's ridiculous. And, you know, where the answer is always in the middle somewhere, you know, and it's a give and take thing. And we don't have that right now, you know, so... I'll help you in any way I can, because it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to get anything done over here. And I just voted today for our local county administrators and legislators. So that's one thing about Florida. They keep us voting all the time.
Yes, they do. The home of the hanging chad.
Exactly. And it was a pleasure talking to you. And maybe we can have you on our Saturday show too.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine, and I'd be happy to come back on.
You know,
I want to say it's been refreshing to have you on tonight. There are so many of us that are so frustrated because we feel like that we have career politicians that are not listening to us, we the people. We have too many low-information voters that sit at home last time. We have people that just go to the poll and they vote because they've always voted Democrat or they've always voted Republican. And we want people to vote for their values, the candidates that aligned with the same values that they have. And you have expressed a lot of the same values that I have. I'm a big fair tax supporter. I personally am a Frederick Douglass Republican. You know, we need somebody that's going to be the person that's going to get it done, that's going to be willing to stand up when nobody else is standing. You know, we've had that the senator from Texas that went and stood up and filibustered for hours and hours. And, you know, when are we going to have people that are willing to represent us for what really counts and what really matters, you know? Not just for big government, but we need somebody that's going to be there for us. And I believe that you are that person in District 19 of Florida that's going to do that for the constituents there. And it also sends a domino effect across the United States. If we can get Congress to align itself with true people that have the same core values and we work with the same goal, we can do that in the House and the Senate, then we can do some things to affect change for 2016 as well. And I'm so proud to say that we have found a candidate for District 19 because we know what has been happening in the past. And we don't need to repeat the same insanity, expecting different results. It's never gotten us anywhere. We can look back in history and see where, you know, those things that we've done in the past did not work. We haven't had anybody that's been able to stand up and fight for us like we had with Reagan in a long time. You know, and so I will tell you, you know, you have my support. Anything that we here can do on Parental Sovereignty Radio to support you, put the word out, you know, social media and that sort of thing, then just know that we will. And we have connections to other resources that can also be a benefit to you as well. So, you know, that's just another wonderful thing that because we've been so actively involved for the last few years and helping to find those true conservative candidates and help them to get over that winning finish line so they can win. And we're doing that for God and country. So thank you.
Well, thank you, and I'm honored. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we'll definitely be behind you 300%. And we have some groups that are helping on many, many different levels. So we're going to put everybody on your side, and we'll go through hell and high water to get you into office because we need people like you.
Well, thank you. We're all in this together.
Well,
that's right, I just did what my co-host says. We always have a great time here on Contending for Truth Radio. Like I say, I like to think of this as a cyber way of sitting around in the living room and just having some good conversation. Of course, we went past the top of the hour. Actually, Michael, it gives us a third hour on Blog Talk, but we're not broadcasting right now. But it's an archive, so at any point anybody can go back and listen to the show. So if they're listening in archive, they're hearing us now. If they were listening online about the last couple of things Dan said, the feed got cut off. But we're going to give you all the support we can have. I want to thank you again for coming on. It was great, and we will have you on again. We'll set you up for a Saturday show. Dan and I have a great time. We talk a lot about history on that show. It's called Saturday Symposium, so I'll be in contact with you to do that. And like I said, anything you need, just shoot me. If you've got something that needs to be spread, shoot it to me in Facebook. I went ahead and logged onto your website with my Facebook and my Twitter, so I can get in there. I'm familiar with Nation Builder. Love those sites. There's some neat things in there, so we'll continue to do that. Folks, this has been Contending for Truth Radio, our parental sovereignty show. We've had some great discussion. We talked a little bit about Red Skelton, so we're going to close the show out. We're going to let Red Skelton close the show out. He does each time he does. I know that he brings a tear to Dan's eye, brings a tear to my eye. Red Skelton, if he were alive today, I'm afraid, might be just not super, super happy with what's going on because he was afraid of some things happening all these years back. So with that, Red Skelton, take it away.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity, allegiance, my love and my devotion, to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose.
and that's love for country. And to the Republic, Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others, for all, which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance: under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?